You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Fun song for flu season, and I will tell you one thing, ladies and gentlemen, if I've ever told you the truth on this show, let me tell it to you now. Johnny Rivers puts on one hell of a concert. Had the opportunity to see him live a few times, and it's rock and roll.
He is underrated, I think. He's really a great, they call him an interpretive artist, but I tell you what, his interpretations are better than the originals very often.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and he had so many. A Mountain of Love, Tracks of My Tears.
Secret Agent Man. Not Asian Man, but Agent Man.
Well, you know, another pun as we go into. I wanted to play that song. It is flu season. We don't want our listeners to get the flu. Or the Boogie Woogie flu especially. You don't want that one. Or the Rockin' Pneumonia. But you don't want the coronavirus either. And so I thought that song would be a nice way to set the stage for what we're going to be talking about this segment. The Wuhan coronavirus genome, Brad Griffin reports, has been sequenced. It jumped from bats to humans through a third incubator species, likely at a wet market last November. Chinese wet markets have always been incubators of these diseases. Now, let me read to you now very quickly, Keith, from the New York Post. This is what the New York Post writes. You can usually smell the markets before you see them, especially if you're downwind. It's a sickly, almost sweet, and nauseating smell of death. Once inside, the stench, made worse by blistering temperatures and zero refrigeration, is overwhelming. And it is places like this where the deadly coronavirus originated. And stall after stall, a mix of live and dead animals, which run the gamut from the known to the rare or unknown due to the condition of the carcass, stare back at you. In the wet areas of the market, usually reserved for fish and sea creatures, and where the ground is slick with water and often blood, the stink is worse. The animals have not yet been dispatched by the butcher's knife. They make desperate bids to escape by climbing on top of each other and flopping or jumping out of their containers to no avail. At least in the wet areas, the animals don't make a sound. The screams from mammals and fowl are unbearable and heartbreaking. These unregulated and usually filthy markets are found all over Asia and Africa. A few years ago, funny, not funny.
And this is the New York Post, by the way.
This is the New York Post. This is the New York Post. A few years ago, a Chinese friend went with me on a tour of the real Chinatown in Queens and quipped, quote, "Listen, in China, anything with four legs but a table and anything with two legs and not a person will eat it," end quote.
Wow. Well, okay, so much for the virtues of multiculturalism and diversity. That's the type of multiculturalism and diversity that we can live without. In fact, we may not be able to live with it. The coronavirus is just the latest of a series of viruses, the SARS virus back in the 70s.
Well, Ebola, they say. I mean,
Ebola, all these things have come and are tracked back to these wet markets. And, you know, can you imagine, you know, that this is so, you know, imagine eating your pet cat or your pet dog. That's what happens at these markets. We certainly don't need these enriching values to come to America or Europe.
Well, here's the thing. And Brad Griffin continues in his own commentary. I should say, too, we did also play that song at the beginning of the segment in tribute to Rich Hamblin, one of our all-time greatest and most generous supporters. He is down with the flu tonight. Keith, what would you like to say to Rich?
Rich, get well soon, my friend. We need you in the fight.
I was texting Rich after he told me that and said, we cannot spare you. We're off the air without you. And your very nice calligraphy-written checks. No, but seriously, I love Rich and Janice.
And your lovely wife.
I was just about to say, don't steal my thunder. She's going to be on in 2 weeks when we do Ladies' Night. I think she should remember that, but we'll remind her. But anyway, Brad Griffin continues on the coronavirus. I guess we finally found something for which white people can't be blamed. We joke about Chinese restaurants now.
They will not blame the Chinese or wet markets in these third world areas.
That's what he asked. I mean, can we joke about Chinese restaurants now, or must we continue to pretend that all cultures are exactly the same? Jokes are based on a grain of truth. Chinese people really do eat weird things like cats, bats, and rats.
And snakes and bats. And why in the world would Americans want to? See, this is Franz Boas's cultural relativity theory taken to the great extreme. If you can believe that this is what would enrich America, then you're a true disciple of Franz Boas and his cultural anthropology theories of the 1920s and 30s. This is what comes of diversity, and what comes of diversity is death. This is what the coronavirus is. It's a very virulent virus that is caused a worldwide health crisis, and it's coming from this great center, this theory that we're all supposed to line up with and worship at the shrine of, which is diversity.
Well, I got to ask you a question. I mean, we know that I'm on this show for my devastatingly good looks. You're on this show because you're smart. So I got to ask you a question, and maybe you can help me find the answer. We're talking about Ebola. They say, you know, Ebola originated. I can't read that word, Brad. From bats doing, you know, defecating, let's just put it that way. Persimmons, which were consumed by gorillas and chimps, which were transmitted to humans by Africans eating bush meat at wet markets. I said that's how, that look, may be how, look, how Ebola got started.
Whatever else, don't eat bats, people. You know, even Count Dracula doesn't eat bats.
They have like these full-fledged bodied bats in this, you know, broth that they're eating. I mean, what? All right, but this leads to the question. I would expect that stuff out of Africa, but out of sub-Saharan Africa. I would expect that. Third world eating habits and sanitation practices are a cause of disease. But I thought China was a first world nation. Now, is it like America where, you know, hey, in Memphis, one side of the tracks could be first world and the other side is third world. Is it like in China? Is China first world in some places and third world in the other? What's going on in China?
Well, no, it was second world. You know, everybody talks about the first world and the third world, but nobody knows what the second world is. The second world was communist nations like China. And China is not like Russia. I guarantee you they don't eat bats and snakes in Russia. Okay, this is a real marker of the differences, the important cultural differences between white and non-white people. The eating, for example, snakes and bats. It's crazy, and we didn't make it up, and it's reported in no less of an authoritative source than the New York Post.
We are going to take a break. We may revisit this segment. We got Tom. I like Tom Kaczynski because he's an authority on all subjects. He's a guy that can talk about anything, and he told me he was preparing for Corona.
Expert on everything.
Corona's supposed to affect like the entire world by the end of the year. We'll talk about it more in the third hour, though. We'll be back.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
She said, I don't have to go right home, and I would kind of like to be alone, son.
You would. I said, me too.
This frog's for you. She said, I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me.
Why did we play it, Keith? Why did we play it?
Well, because we don't like spiders and snakes. That's not the way to love us, and it's also not the way to feed us. And they probably sell edible spiders and snakes, or try to pretend that they're edible, in these Chinese wet markets,
well,
and third world wet markets.
I got to say, too,
we don't like them, baby.
About this, I think the last count was a little less than 8,000 people infected, a little less than 200 who have died.
That's like a mild flu season.
I'll take my odds with it. They do say that people have no immunity to it. It's going to circle the globe, and everybody's going to have it by election 2020. The whole world.
Let's just hope it's wrong. But on the other hand, that's why we don't like spiders and snakes, and don't want them on our menu. Don't need them in the Chinese buffet.
I got a very, very, very quickly. Yeah, we said at the end of the first hour a bequest, leaving TPC in your will, so we can continue fighting on your behalf even after you've gone on to your eternal reward. The work will still be done here on this earthly plane. So consider that. I have never asked for that in the 16 years we've been on the air, but somebody did finally put us in their will this year, and that was nice.
Wasn't so, Kobe.
I wish, because he certainly had it to spare. No, I don't believe it was. But we had a listener. I'll tell you the other end of it, and this means just as much in all honesty. We had a listener this week, first-time donor, and they sent $5.23. And $5.23, they said, we hope that this helps.
The widow's mite.
Hope that this helps you in your fight for free speech. And then there's another lady, Elizabeth, down in Florida on one of the Florida beaches, and she sends in about once a month, but it's always a different amount. And we thank Elizabeth for her support, too, and for everyone who donates quarterly, monthly, whenever-ly, we thank you. And speaking of Everly, Don Everly's 83rd birthday.
Yes, we need to play something on from the Everly Brothers.
We'll do that before Kevin McDonald comes on in the next segment. Kevin's going to be talking to us about the impeachment that appears to be wrapping up. We're going to get to that. One thing, I think I mentioned this before. Sam and Rick probably mentioned it last week, but you know, we said that whole thing in Virginia was much ado about nothing. They had tens of thousands of people show up. And what happened the very next day? They showed up on King Day. We call it Lee Day. But it was a holiday nonetheless. And the day after, Tuesday, when government went back into session in Virginia, House Democrats shut down several gun rights bills filed by Republicans. Democrats shut down 11 bills within about 2 hours on Tuesday. So literally the day after tens of thousands of Virginians came to their capital in Richmond, the Democrats are making it clear that the message of supporting the Second Amendment was falling on deaf ears. Might makes right.
Well, let me tell you, this demonstration in Richmond and the fact that it was uneventful and nonviolent shows you the importance of the Second Amendment. If I predict, and I take the position that, had the demonstrators not been armed, if they had been good law-abiding cucks like the governor of Virginia wanted them to be and left their guns at home, it would have been a replay of Charlottesville. I guarantee it. That's why it's so important. You know, a armed society is a polite society. I've heard James say this, and I've heard other people say that, and it's true. If you don't want Antifa getting up in your grill and trying to bust open, bust the windows out of your car like happened to James Fields at Charlottesville, you need to be armed. You don't have to use the guns. I don't think they're suicidal enough to try to attack all the people that were armed with AR-15s and AK-47s that were at that demonstration. But the people that had those guns show that they are very capable of resisting impulses and not getting into, not pulling the trigger on this these people. But it also shows just how important it is to be armed in a basically lawless society, which we are becoming in America with every passing day.
All right, Keith, I got to make haste with this, so sit tight. Kevin McDonald's coming up next. I want to try to get into this. So I made a monthly appearance on YouTube last week with longtime friends Bill Johnson and Paul Fromm. Had a wide-ranging discussion about any number of subjects, including Harry and Meghan, lawsuits and activists, the race card, latest monkey shines in Baltimore, much more. Expertly moderated by Ken Gividen, but we spent a lot of time discussing Peter Brimelow's lawsuit against the New York Times. Now, we've mentioned it on this show as well. I was brought on specifically to provide insights from the attempt to get justice, even as a public dissident against the Detroit News, which, of course, Peter is now following up on. We talked about that. Peter is suing the New York Times for $5 million. I gave my thoughts, my insights. But there is now another similar lawsuit that has been filed. I got to really go quickly to get this in before the end of the segment. Talk about being a trailblazer. I don't know of anyone attempting this before we did. And considering how that case turned out, I'm shocked that anyone would try it again. But we do have another case, another libel case. The headline reads, Huffington Post writer faces $1 million libel lawsuit. Plaintiff alleges he was falsely labeled a white supremacist. Here's the story. The Huffington Post and one of its writers is facing a $1 million lawsuit filed by Charles Johnson, who alleges he was falsely labeled a white supremacist. Charles Johnson filed a complaint January the 16th in the Houston Division of the Southern District of Texas against Verizon, CMP Holdings, LLC, HuffPost.com, Incorporated, and Andy Campbell, alleging libel. According to the complaint, Johnson is involved with, quote, a conservative political cause, end quote. He alleges that a Huffington Post article authored by Campbell entitled Two GOP Lawmakers Host Chuck Johnson, Holocaust-Denying White Nationalist, was a hit job, suggesting he was a white supremacist, white nationalist, and anti-Semitic. Johnson seeks monetary relief in excess of $1 million, a trial by jury, and all other just relief. All right, let me say this about the Chuck Johnson and Peter Brimelow lawsuits. I like Peter Brimelow. I don't know Chuck Johnson. I know who he is. I've not worked with him or collaborated with him. Peter is a friend of mine. My case had more merit than either of these cases, and I'm not saying that they don't deserve to win, but I had precedent behind me, the quintessential definition of what constitutes libel behind me, according to the Restatement of Torts. That threshold had not only been exceeded or met, but exceeded. Kyle Bristow had written simply masterful briefs, my attorney, and responses. I don't think any attorney in the world could have done a better job. He listed previous rulings that reinforced our position, wrote a full and complete verbal picture of who I really am, and we still got utterly routed to the extent that my case rewrote libel law in favor of the liars. Jesse Jackson was flown in to award the person who libeled me. But all of the press afterwards referred to me as a conservative talk radio host, if you can believe it, in the articles that were written covering the decision of the case. So at least we won that. But we will always fight, and we will never stop fighting. But regarding Brimelow and Johnson, Keith, and I hate to say this, but I'll be interested to see if they get sanctioned. I think they are more likely to get sanctioned than to get a favorable verdict. Trump talked a good game about all of this, but he didn't do anything, of course, with regard to loosening the libel laws.
Well, let me just say this. It depends on the venue. You had the worst possible venue you could have had for that case. You were right in the middle of Detroit in a state court that had, two blacks and a Jewish judge on the panel.
Or vice versa.
Something like that. But anyway, in South Texas, you may find something falling in your the direction of the
conservative. I'll be interested to see.
I'd love to see.
I'll be interested to see. Others are following our lead in the perilous terrain.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
China is now facing increased isolation from other countries with international curbs and flight suspensions. The death toll from the spreading coronavirus outbreak is now at least 304. U.S. health officials are confirming an eighth case, a person in Massachusetts. Dr. Larry Madoff with the Bureau of Infectious Disease and Laboratory Sciences says the virus particles are not airborne.
They're spread from an infected person to another person. This kind of spread requires close face-to-face contact over a period of time. It's not like measles, for example, which can be spread through the air and through which just casual contact can result in infection.
The U.S. is banning foreign nationals who have recently been to China. White House Democratic hopeful John Delaney has decided to drop out of the race in his run for the presidency. This is USA Radio News.
If you're thinking about life insurance from low-cost term to business or estate coverage or perhaps a small policy to cover your final expenses, why spend more than you have to? Hi, I'm John David Wells from the Wells Report. Since 1986, AccuQuote has helped hundreds of thousands of folks save a fortune on their life insurance by quickly comparing the rates, features, and financial strength of dozens of top-rated life insurance products right over the phone. Want some examples? A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy a $500,000 10-year level term policy for less than $45 a month. Oh, you say you're 60? No problem. Under $120 a month. 20 or 30 year terms, even permanent plans are available. Okay, so you might have some health problems, huh? Lots of us do, but the experts at AccuQuote will still work with you to find the best affordable policy. To find out how much you can save, call AccuQuote today, 877-439-8830. That's 877-439-8830. 877-439-8830. AccuQuote. Call them today.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
The president has signed an executive order to stop human trafficking, John Clemens reports.
The president's order would increase interagency cooperation to battle human trafficking.
My administration is putting unprecedented pressure on traffickers at home and abroad, and we are freeing innocent victims at every single turn.
Mr. Trump's order that marks the 20th anniversary of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act also establishes a task force that will have a focus on the growing number of missing and murdered American Indians. Americans, including Alaska Natives. That order creates a White House position to battle against traffickers that use websites and phone apps that are used to lure potential victims.
One of the people who testified during the impeachment inquiry, former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch, has retired from her 33-year career as a diplomat. She testified in October that there had been a smear campaign against her, which led to her ouster as an ambassador. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh yeah, oh, wanna be by my side. Oh yeah, oh, now it's finally time.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Making his first appearance of 2020 is a mainstay guest and good friend, Dr. Kevin McDonald, a former professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, and the author of several books, including The Culture of Critique, Cultural Insurrections, and of course his newest book, which we have promoted quite heavily, Individualism, Cultural Tradition, Evolutionary Origins, History, and Prospects for the Future. Find it at Amazon.com tonight. He currently serves as the editor of the Occidental Quarterly and the OccidentalObserver.net, and he's returning this hour to talk impeachment. And it would appear as though, Kevin, the impeachment farce is wrapping up. I guess it ever had much of a chance to win. Who cares? It was a piece of political theater for the masses, but you wrote an article about it that is actually quite interesting, and that's why you're on tonight.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, I'm glad it's over. It's over once more. I didn't watch it on TV or anything. It was just too, it was the most boring impeachment in history. But I wrote an article, and you know, because I deal with Jewish issues, I asked the question: Is a Jewish? How Jewish is it? And of course, it is very Jewish. You know, Schiff and Adler, especially Schiff, like, all over this thing, and they were like the standouts. I think Schiff's actually, I think he's really made a career. It's a career movie. I think he wants to run for senator now. He probably wants to be president eventually, but we'll see what happens. But anyway, I do think it was very much a Jewish thing. I think that once I talk about in the article, I talk about some of the witnesses. I talk about these legal scholars. I have a very strongly Jewish identity. I say it's a project of the Jewish left. I mean, there were certainly Jews who were not on board with this, like, you know, Sekulow, the president attorney, is a born-again Christian now. He's one of these sort of Jews for Jesus guys.
They call him Messianic Jews.
Exactly, yeah. He's made millions. His family's made millions on this. They do outreach and, telephone soliciting. And they've made
He's got a radio program that plays on the religious stations here in Memphis. Got the ALJ, the American Legal something or other. And he has his own law school there in the D.C. area. So Sekulow is quite a big guy. Let me ask you this, Kevin. Is Adam Schiff related to Jacob Schiff, the infamous financier of the Bolshevik Revolution?
Yeah, I never read anything to that effect. But, you know, they are related and some of the same attitudes.
Jacob Schiff is your favorite. Kevin, if Keith likes to say it sometimes when he asks a question, he may or may not be, but if he's not, he's missing a hell of an opportunity, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, anyway, Kevin, break down the article for TOO that you wrote about the Jewish implications and the Jewish effects of the impeachment
and the
farce.
The Jewish influence on it.
That's the way I should have put it, the Jewish influence of the impeachment farce.
Well, the big picture is that Trump's election was traumatic, I think, for most Jews in this country. During 2016, I wrote like five articles for VDare about the sort of fear and loathing that these Jewish intellectuals had. And we're not just talking about liberal Jews. We're talking about these neocons, these never Trumpers. And just today and yesterday, Max Boot and Bill Kristol both them were just card-carrying neocons associated with the Republican Party and all that. They're not,
and Jews.
They're completely through. Well, who's that?
I said, and they're Jews, too.
They're
I don't want to belabor the obvious, but Max Boot and Jonah Goldberg, yeah, people like this that are part of the, yeah, neoconservative writing fraternity are, you know, it's amazing how Jewish neoconservatism is, and they were also never Trumpers.
Yeah, and Jennifer Rubin, the so-called conservative at the Washington Post. I mean, what a joke. I mean, and she completely... Wanting impeachment, you know, and every liberal attitude you can imagine on immigration and diversity and all that.
With conservatives like Jennifer Rubin, who needs liberals?
Who needs liberals? Exactly. I mean, I really think, I just tweeted something to that effect. I mean, there's no mystery why the Republican Party has failed to conserve anything. I mean, during the Reagan administration, the neoconservatives really moved in. Elbowed out these paleoconservatives, a big, you know, Samuel Francis, you know, who died 20 years ago now, great intellectual on our side, had a, you know, firsthand look at this and described how these neocons just pushed people out and sullied their reputation. Oftentimes,
M.E. Bradford, going to be the head of the National Endowment for the Humanities was ousted.
That's a famous case. Yeah, famous case, and they got their people in there, and they got the Foundation for Advancement of Democracy or whatever it is in the administration. And ever since then, they've been pushing wars, in the Middle East, and at the same time, sort of liberal social programs. So the Republican Party has just moved in that direction. And I really think that was an important, movement that happened, in the 1980s. And we're still seeing it now. But they really pushed out of the Republican Party. They can't go back there now. I mean, it's really Trump's party. And I was just looking at the New York Times today, and they were just, in mourning because the impeachment's not going to happen. They say now the Republican Party is a party of a personality cult of Trump, acting like it's...
Well, what is wrong with these people, Kevin? You know, don't they realize that Jared Kushner and his wife, Ivanka, right, Donald Trump's daughter, are Jews? They're typical Manhattan liberals, and they're the chief advisors to President Trump. But nonetheless, you would think that President Trump was Pitchfork Ben Tillman or something from the 19th century.
You would, and I do think that they sort of cut their ties with the Republican Party in 2016. You know, they were the never Trumpers, very vocal about it. Tried to run this idiot David French against Trump. And all this kind of stuff. So I don't think you're going to be welcomed back in the party, not the way it is now. It is amazing how the Republican Party, despite the fact that there are an awful lot of Republicans who don't like Trump and are not on board with the populist rhetoric that he ran on, but nevertheless, 51 out of 53 senators voted not to take any more witnesses, and it's going to be at least the same for impeachment on Wednesday. So thankfully, it's over. But that's one thing I really hit on in the article is that these Jewish intellectuals going back to the 1940s, it really struck me, writing Culture of Critique, that you had this hatred towards populism that goes way back. They couldn't, in the 1930s, there were certain sort of populist politicians like Huey Long and the Father Coughlin on the radio. And they were really, rabble rousers, and Coughlin especially didn't like Jews at all. So it goes back to that. And what they want is a society that's run by elites, a sort of top-down oligarchy where they make the decisions and then they run it through their media and they get public support for it. It's sort of a top-down model of society. And Trump's political genius, if you want to call it that, was to see that, the populace could win, that this was out of touch with American attitudes on immigration and multiculturalism and even trade, all these things like that. So he really struck a nerve, and that's why he's president.
Well, you know, and there in the Jewish power and influence's primary villain, I think you could make a very strong case for this, are Southern white Gentiles. And I've always wondered what Southern white Gentiles did to them to deserve that type of animus.
Oh, yeah. And that goes way back. I mean, I remember the first reading in the early 20th century, how they you could already see the hatred towards white Southerners. And, you know, for example, with the Leo Frank case, you know, he's the Jewish guy that was convicted of murdering this girl in Atlanta, Georgia. That was one of the first ones. And then you know, he was convicted, and the Republican governor was going to let him go, and they lynched him. And it was an amazing thing.
Well, basically what they did was undermine worldwide Jewish power and influence, and that's an unforgivable sin.
Hang on right there, gentlemen. Two intellectual giants, Dr. Kevin MacDonald and our own Keith Alexander, going at it, matching wits and wisdom. And we'll be back to talk more about the impeachment right after these words. I'm James Edwards. You're listening to TPC.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It ain't gonna happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Never felt like this until I kissed Jeff. How did I exist until I kissed Jeff? Never had you on my mind. Now you're there all the time. Never knew what a
kissed ya. Oh yeah, things have really changed since I kissed ya. My life's not the same now that I kissed ya. Oh yeah, you're not a will about ya.
Well, some people may ask, why would you play that song in the middle of a Kevin McDonald interview? Well, the reason, of course, is because Don Everly, one of the two Everly brothers, was born on February the 1st, 1937. He's still alive. He's 83 years old. Kevin, when you hear music like that, what do you think of?
I think of the 1950s. I recognize that song. By high school, junior, I guess. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but yeah. It was good times. I tell you, it was I talk about that in the article, that the 1950s was sort of the last gasp of our culture, where we were still in the driver's seat. I talk about Joe McCarthy, that was the last gasp, because then you had the 1960s and, the countercultural revolution. It really was a counterculture.
It was the last time when Southern white boys like Don and Phil Everly could be cultural heroes.
Well, and I'll tell you another thing interesting about the Everly brothers. I don't remember if it was Don or Phil. Of course, Don's still alive. Phil passed away a few years ago. But one of them bought a home in Tennessee. They were Kentucky boys, so it wasn't too far of a jump to come
Kentucky
back
Hill boys.
To Tennessee. They bought a home, and they said one of the things that was most magnificent about the home, one of the things that they respected and appreciated the most, was it was a home that Nathan Bedford Forrest recuperated in after one of his injuries during the war between the states. And then they bought that home and said that that was something that they loved about the home, and that there was a song in there somewhere about that. But we were talking about Nathan Bedford Forrest earlier in the program, Kevin. He is going to actually be dug up and removed from his resting place in Memphis.
A friendlier locale in rural Tennessee.
And it's a shame that it's come to that. But in any event, let's go back to the impeachment. That's what we're talking about right now. So this whole thing is about to come to a close. The Senate is not going to be questioning so-called witnesses. They're not going to be doing anything. They're going to go to a straight vote for acquittal. This thing's going to end this week. And what we were talking about with Sam Bushman during the break is that this is a win-win-win for everybody except the American people. The House wins. The Democratic-controlled House wins because they could say, we did our best. We impeached the vile, racist, white supremacist Trump, but we couldn't get it done. The Senate wins because they can say, we defended the president for all you good conservatives. Democracy wins because Trump remains on the ballot and rule of law is upheld. The Kobe Bryant story dominates the headlines this very week to kind of obscure the fact that the Bidens are going to get off scot-free. Forget ever hearing anything else about Joe and Hunter Biden and whatever illegalities they may have been involved with. That's gone. So, Kevin, your thoughts on how this plays out and what it portends for the election in November, and if the Democrats ever really thought they were going to be able to pull off a coup here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm one of the people that really wanted to see some witnesses like the Bidens. I mean, this is just obviously dirty what happened with those guys. I wanted to see that. I wanted to see the so-called whistleblower. I wanted to put Adam Schiff on the stand. I think that the whole thing would have been really great, actually. But, it doesn't really change anything. And as you said, Democrats can say they won, and they do. And you can see, if you follow sort of, liberal left people on Twitter, I mean, they're all wringing their hands and saying how evil. It's virtue signaling. It's how good we are and how irredeemably evil the Republicans are. That sort of. So they're all getting off on it. And nothing's really changed. But I don't know. It's not going to change.
Well, Kevin, this is Keith. Let me just say this: this whole episode is showing me. It's bringing into focus the fact that my ancestors and James's ancestors were right. we really need to be two different countries, because apparently on the left coast and on the Acela corridor, people actually think like Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler. People in flyover country, they can't believe that there's even a prospect of the Democrats winning the presidential election, because everybody they know feels like they do, which is that the whole impeachment episode was a farce. It was just a way to avoid, to prevent Trump from doing what he was elected to do.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and I do think that, that conservative talk radio and talk TV had something to do with it. I mean, they were just, from day one, they were just absolute contempt for this process. I mean, Tucker Carlson, certainly Hannity was going to mess with this. Limbaugh, they were just really, you know, up in arms about it, that it was outrageous. And I have to agree. I mean, I think this phone call is silly. I mean, there's corruption. Shouldn't we want to do something about it? And is it really that horrible to put some pressure on for an investigation? It really isn't. It's not impeachable. It's stupid. But, you know, and one of the points I made at the end of the article was that you know, that these Jews like Schiff, they just can't leave it alone. I don't think Pelosi wanted the impeachment. I think that she was pressured into it by Schiff and the radicals in the House, and so they sort of had to go through with it. And, you know, from their point of view, like Schiff and Nadler, the real Jewish activists, they, you know, Trump, they had to squash it. You know, they can't let any, they can't let, leave any stone unturned. They just have to go for it. Very aggressive. But I think it's going to blow up in their faces. I don't think it's going to really, you know, people have made up their mind a long time ago about this, and I don't think that it's going to change much in terms of opinion that people are saying. So it's just one aspect of the hyper-polarized reality now. It's just, you know, it's like everything else now, whether it's, you know, any aspect of diversity, immigration, you name it. I mean, Trump appoints a panel to deal with the coronavirus, and people are going up in arms because they don't see any non-whites on it.
Kevin, hold on.
Crazy.
I saw that this week that there was a. Yeah, I saw that the assembly of experts that he had put together just so happened to be all white, and that this is the thing that's supposed to be inherently evil and bad. Folks, I want to remind you, with only a couple of minutes left, to check out theoccidentalobserver.net to stay in touch with Kevin McDonald and all of his latest work. But, Kevin, we have a caller from Colorado who's been waiting patiently. I certainly want to give him the opportunity to ask you a question. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, guys. Hey, James. Hey, Keith. Hey, Dr. McDonald. I got your book, Culture Critique, a couple years ago, and I just got your Individualism and the West of Liberal Tradition. Interesting, because I just went back to college, and I had to take a class on Holocaust. I use the book as a source, but just it's amazing how anti-white and liberal they are. Like, even the grad students have the same. God, I wish I had you as a professor, Dr. McDonald.
I wish I could have had a student like you. I tell you, I didn't have hardly any that were really conscious of it. People sort of knew who I was, but they didn't come in and talk to me.
Like, you know, like when I, like the Holocaust class, I'd say, well, the Germans were worried about communism, and they would be like, well, communism worked. You know, they didn't mean to kill those people. Yeah.
That was a big motivating force, wasn't it, for National Socialism, was the fact that communism was had happened in the Soviet Union, and it was horrifying. You know, billions of people were dead. It was just disastrous.
And that's exactly why, you know, like Franco came to power, because they tried to take over Spain. These liberals, just like, I don't know, their minds are poisoned. I can't even reason with it, you know?
No, you can't. And you can't talk to people anymore. That's, like I said, we're hyper-polarized. We can't talk to each other anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's the state of American politics. And I don't know where we'd go when you can't talk to each other anymore. It's like 1860 or before the Civil War, you know.
Used to disagree with my liberal friends in the past, but those same liberal friends, they won't even talk to me.
Now they won't talk to me. They hate me. Even family members won't talk to me. This is very, very sad. And
We'll come down here. Both of you guys come down to us here in Tennessee, and you'll be among friends.
Oh, yeah. Hey, too crazy out here.
I got to say, I wish we'd have taken this caller sooner. I wish we had another segment so we could just let this caller and Kevin speak to one another, because I have been as engrossed over the course of the last 2 minutes as I have any 2 minutes in a long
show.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is fantastic. We matched a pupil and a student. That's what we're here to do, right, Keith?
And Kevin McDonald is like the scholar in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. He gladly learn and gladly teach.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, well, thank you so much for calling in from California. Kevin, always good to talk to you. Next time we have you on, Kevin, we're going to let this guy call in at the top of the show. We'll just run as far as it goes. But theoccidentalobserver.net. Kevin, always good to talk to you.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
We'll be back with Tom Kaczynski. If we haven't covered it yet, we'll cover it in the third hour. I promise you. Tom Kaczynski's up
next. All right.